Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. If you haven't heard the local election results from yesterday yet, all five New York City charter changes were approved by the voters. Here comes ranked choice voting for city elections, among a few other things. Jersey City voters rebuked Airbnb in that referendum, and Sussex County voters rebuked the idea of New Jersey as a sanctuary state for undocumented immigrants who commit minor crimes. And New York City public advocate Jumaane Williams was reelected to fill out the remaining 2 years of the current term. Remember, he's filling out the term of Letitia James, who got elected New York State Attorney General. And he is with us now to talk about issues, including the change of police commissioners in New York City this week and more. Public advocate, welcome back to WNYC, and congratulations. You're two for two.
Thanks, Brian. I appreciate it very much. I'm very glad to be on. Always happy.
You've had the job only for months, not years so far. What have you found its value to be? Because a lot of people don't get what public advocate does, even to this day.
Yeah, that's actually true. And then one of the things I want to make sure happens is whenever my tenure ends, that people will no longer ask what a public advocate is and do we need it. I mean, there's five basic powers that were given to by the charter. You can introduce legislation. You're an ombudsman for the people between the people in government. You're a charter cop making sure that the agencies are doing the job they're supposed to do. You can appoint people to committees like city planning, and now thanks to the referendum, including CCRB and more on the complicated issues board, and you can vote on a pension. But other than that, you know, the bully pulpit is a really important role. Someone who's there specifically to be a check on the mayor and on the council on behalf of the public. I think that's critically important, actually.
How do you think you've done that, for example, in your months in office?
Well, we've passed more pieces of legislation than any public advocate to this point, so we're excited about that. We've begun to restructure what the office is and how it looks. A great example, though, is as a council member, I was really pushing the mayor to put out to do a task force on how the city responds to people who are in a mental health crisis. He said he was going to do a report. It never happened. We waited a year and a half. I wouldn't have been able to do this as a council member, but I put out our own report from the public advocate's office, and I think it's really helped the conversation. So that's just one great example of what we were able to do.
And listeners, we can take a few phone calls for now reelected. Not many people get to be elected and then reelected in the same calendar year. But by the quirk of the nature of when Letitia James left from being New York City public advocate, that has happened now for Jumaane Williams. We can take a few phone calls for him with any questions at 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. One of the charter revisions approved yesterday was actually for a minimum budget for the office of public advocate, wasn't it?
Yeah, so, you know, my Joe Borelli and I, who ran against me, don't agree on almost anything at all. But we do agree, one, that quirk you spoke about in the law should be changed. There's no reason that we should have had another election after the special election. And one of the things we kind of agree on is that we definitely should strengthen the public advocate's office. There were two ways that I thought we should do that immediately. And one of them was actually an independent budget. So I'm very excited that passed. For people who don't know, the public advocate, whomever that is, would every single year have to go basically beg the mayor and the council for their budget. And during that, in between those times, then supposed to hold those very people accountable. And sometimes that is not the best way to be having oversight over someone, you know, having to then go ask them for money. And so we said that if we have an independent budget, something that at least it can never go below, that will be helpful. And the voters agree. And so, you know, there was an example, former Mayor Bloomberg cut the then public advocate Betsy Gopalm's budget because he was mad at her. We want to make sure something like that doesn't happen again.
And didn't it happen under Giuliani, too, when he cut or wanted to cut the budget and the powers of the Office of Public Advocate when it was Mark Green, a liberal thorn in his side?
Yes, I believe so as well. Absolutely.
What are the most common calls for help that you've gotten so far as public advocate? Because there are the policy aspects of the job, like you were just describing, but there's also the individual ombudsman function between residents of New York City and city government, right?
Yes, absolutely. We get calls daily. We have a very robust constituent service, constituent service folks that do great work, headed up by Beverly Gooding, who's my constituent affairs director. I think the number one call we get in, and I get on the street actually, is about housing. Housing is huge. Someone is either looking for housing, being evicted for housing, and about to be homeless. We've gotten calls from people in the shelter who are not getting the services they think it can, so they think they should. So housing and homelessness is a very big issue that we get a lot of calls about.
Everyone who's a borough president or a controller or other prominent position seems to be planning to run for mayor. So a lot of listeners must be wondering, now that you've been elected and reelected, New York City Public Advocate, one of only three citywide elected officials, are you?
I've made it abundantly clear, so folks don't seem to believe me. I'll be running for reelection for public advocate in 2021.
All right. Police behavior and criminal justice reform have been among your central issues throughout your career, certainly on city council. What do you think of Commissioner O'Neill's 3 years on the job and the appointment by the mayor this week of Dermot Shea to succeed him?
You know, I believe that James O'Neill had a two combination quality that's hard to find. One is came in respected as a cop's cop, but also had a desire to make some changes, you know, not as far as I wanted to go, so we continue to push. But I think both of those things are important, and we want to make sure that the next commissioner also has it. I just want to say I think it was disgusting what Ed Mullins did on the Sergeant Benevolent Association letterhead, basically excoriating James O'Neill. And Ed Mullins and that crew have never been a friend of making policing better. So I want to make sure I just say that. I am frustrated that this mayor who came in talking about diversity has now skipped over the top-ranking black and brown people who work in the NYPD for another white male. And that's three times. You know, once, maybe you'll say something about one time, two times. Three times, it seems to be a pattern. And so I'm very frustrated by that. And I think Benjamin Tucker was the one person that everybody thought made sense simply because who he was in the police department, whether or not you think it was the person that was the most likely to make the changes. But when you look at who gets bumped up, Benjamin Tucker seemed to make the most sense. And so that's a frustration. I think that was just an insult to certain communities, and that needs to be responded to.
We'll ask the mayor. Let me follow up on that for a second, because we'll certainly ask the mayor that question when he's here on Friday. Maybe we'll play him the clip of what you just said. But what do you think was in the mayor's mind? Because here's a mayor who got elected twice, overwhelmingly with people of color support. You know, when you look at his popularity polls, he's got about a 30% approval rating among white New Yorkers, but over a 60% approval rating among black New Yorkers. That's his constituency. So are you accusing him of racism, or what do you think was going on with the mayor in this choice?
I don't know if I'm accusing anyone of racism. It seems to be a similar pattern with the governor that have high approval ratings in the black community as well. And maybe they think that gives liberties to do certain things, like hire three white males in a row. And when we look at the police department in particular, although it has gotten more diverse, all the numbers show, even with increased diversity, the people most likely to be promoted are still white males. And so we have to do something about it. I worked with Dermot Shea on the periphery, so I don't know him as well. And he may make a great commissioner. And so I'm looking forward to speaking with him about the issues I have and continue to move this city forward with safer policing, with safer streets and better policing. And so I want to make sure I give him his due for the position he has and congratulate him on that. But it's less about this one appointment and just about what seems to be a pattern. So the mayor really has has to respond as to why that is. And I'm sure he's going to have some responses about who he thought was the best person. It always seemed that there's never a qualified Black or Latino person for certain positions. And that's just a hard thing to accept, especially when you have someone like Benjamin Tucker, or Rodney Harrison. We have a lot of people, including Black and brown females, who are in there. So, and what also is frustrating to me is it seems like those people weren't even asked. So it seems like those people weren't even considered. I think you can also make a case if you spoke to people, if you considered them, if you went through the process. But it seems like they were just skipped over and went straight to a person who, it appears, this might have been a plan all along, since he seemed to be elevating rather quickly.
Mm-hmm. Do you think, from the mayor's standpoint, it might have been to keep some semblance of peace with the police unions or rank and file as represented by the unions? And to that point, do you think O'Neill was hounded out by the police unions? Is de Blasio susceptible to allowing that to happen? Because we know how angry the union leadership was after the firing of Officer Pantaleo.
It's been clear that, from everyone who's watching, that the police unions have gotten under the mayor's skin. I do think there were some things done based on how he believed the unions would respond. I think James O'Neill made a decision to leave with a bunch of factors. I don't think what the unions did was the primary factor. I'm sure that falls into some kind of consideration as a human being, but I believe that there might have been other factors there. But I would say, if the consideration is to kind of have a continuation, that further bolsters what many of us are saying, because Benjamin Tucker will probably be the same continuation as well. So I'm not sure if that would be the deciding factor between a Benjamin Tucker and a Demon Shea.
Chris, on the Lower East Side, you're on WNYC with newly reelected New York City public advocate Jermani Williams. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Jermani. Congratulations. I voted for you, despite there was some interesting competition. One of the reasons I voted for you was your support of the specialized high schools and the tests. And we were curious about if you would come out and support gifted and talented programs for the earlier kids, the K-5. So if you would take a position in support of GNT and make some sort of commitment to try to preserve these programs that work and include us parents in decision-making, not these strange committees that seem to be formed on some agenda of, I don't know what, racial bean counting or what, but we'd like, as parents, we'd like to get your support.
Well, thank you so much for the question. Thank you for your support. I really appreciate it. As a graduate of Brooklyn Tech, it was important to me that and I want to make it clear that the test was at least one way that people can get in to these schools, because it was the only way I would have gotten in. So I do accept if someone wants to have a discussion about some kind of hybrid where someone can show what they can do based on multiple criteria, and then someone can show what they can do like I did with a test. And then on top of that, we keep acting like these are the only schools in the system, and they're not. And many of the multiple criteria schools are just as horrible with diversity than the specialized high schools. What I want to make sure we do is have this discussion in a way that makes more sense. And I think the mayor has failed here. Every time these discussions have occurred, they seem to throw people to their corners. And so we use gifted and talented, we're taking this away, we're taking that away. And so what I want, and you know, there's knee-jerk reactions to getting rid of the gifted and talented earlier, like the ones I went to school with in junior high school, how I got to Brooklyn Tech, and now we see the results. But we need to take a step back. And so we have to make sure that even the most progressive of communities really cares about their child. And so we seem to be having these discussions forgetting that people, yes, want to make the system better for everybody, but then they want to know what's happening with my child. What's going to happen to my child? They're going to get what they need. And I think that discussion hasn't happened with those sensitivities. And so what I'm saying is, whether it's gifted and talented, I think what people want to make sure is their child can have the enrichment services they need at the level that they need it. And so I support that. What is clear to me, the way Bloomberg made gifted and talented programs now, does not work. Diversity is a huge problem and it leads to certain people not getting the enrichment services they need, and then not being able to be the best residents of the city that they can. And so what I want to see happen, and I do believe the way the gifted and talented programs now needs to change, you definitely shouldn't be testing four-year-olds, but I think there's a way for everyone to have enrichment services. And that's the plan that we have to go toward, so that a child in East New York can get educated the same as a child in the Upper West Side, not have to worry about anything. Those who are doing not so well can be lifted up by those who are. And there are systems in place where that happens. And we all should be looking at the same data, same information, and the same programs. And I think some of the problem is that some folks are looking at those in silos and then saying, oh, look, just trust me. But I don't think we should do that. I think we should all agree that the system and the school system needs to provide enrichment services for all. And this is how your child in particular is going to get what they need. And that's where I am on the discussion.
This is WNYC FM HD and AM New York, WNJT FM 88.1 Trenton, WNJP 88.5 Sussex, WNJY 89.3 Netcong, WNJO 90.3 Toms River. We are New York and New Jersey Public Radio, almost out of time with New York City Public Advocate Jumaane Williams. Let's get in one more call. Justin in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Justin.
Good morning, Brian, and congratulations again, Jumaane. I just want to ask a question, though. Based on what I saw with the mayor and the police force, I just want to know if a black commissioner would make a difference, because the police force, at least in New York City, have a very scripted way of how it deals with issues. And I don't think it make a difference whether the police force is black, the commissioner is black or white. Because I remember when you have police officers turning their back against the mayor, you have people in black people in high office in the police force who did not say nothing about it. And we all know what triggers that reaction. He said something about his black son. And you have people, and I know the mayor doing damage control right now with the police force for something which he did no damage. But it make a difference whether we have a black commissioner or not. Because in some cases, even when the police, what they call friendly fire, which I think is the most absurd thing to say, blame the person who you go to harass, because you have the police shoot another police, but you blame the other person who you go to harass. And I think... Mm-hmm.
Justin, let me get, only because we're running out of time, let me get a reaction for you from the public advocate. You hear his arguments about the systemic problems and that the race of the police commissioner might not actually make anything more than a symbolic difference.
That is an excellent point and an excellent question, and I thank Justin for that. Thank you for his congratulations on that question. When I was at the heat of battle with the abusive stop, question and frisk with Ray Kelly, I restrained from saying that Ray Kelly should resign and be replaced. And that was because of exactly what Justin brought up. This is a systemic issue. And I know every time we have a police commissioner, people say, oh, they need to resign. They need to change. Like, how many police commissioners do you need to fix the problem? And that's because it is systemic. And it is bigger than just one person. At the same time, with all things considered, symbolism is important in certain ways. And you do want to have the proper leadership to have discussion. Now, I said that we should have a commissioner of more color when Bratton left. And when you picked James O'Neill, I said if there's one person that would have made sense at the moment in time to quell some of that was James O'Neill, because of the combination of things that I said he had, and I knew the willingness he had to make some changes. Again, at the same time, that aside, if you have an opportunity to put someone in a position where we know we've had problems with specific communities, where you have come in and said, I want to see more diversity, where everyone has said that even though this particular department is diverse, the people who are being elevated are still the same white males who have always been elevated, even though they are now becoming the minority, then that's a problem. So symbolism is not what we should be aiming for first. But in a system like this, with all things considered, we want to make sure that everybody has the same access to rise. And that doesn't seem to be the case, because now, again, you might be explaining away one, you could explain away two, but three times is a pattern. And if you have a system like this where you only say that white males are the only women that you can find to run this department, that is a problem for many of the communities who are saying we have an issue with this particular department.
What did you think about the two police subway station incidents in Brooklyn last week, one where a police officer punched a teenager, the other where several officers had drawn their guns in a crowded subway car to subdue what turned out to be an unarmed team? Are they different, Teen? Are they different from one another, in your opinion, these two incidences? Do you judge one more harshly than the other?
So, you know, I always try to make sure I put things in context. And remember that we're dealing with human beings. I think fundamentally, all of us, you, me, the callers, we all have implicit bias. And if we don't acknowledge that and work hard to deal with it or pretend it's not there, then we have problems. And there is something that happens to people who are public-facing, police officers. We've seen this in doctors who have a harder time providing medicine to people who have darker skin because they think they can take more pain. We see it in teachers. What happens when you see black and brown skin? And the response there too often is overzealousness. And we saw that on a train with a gentleman with his hands up asking whether he should go down on the floor or not. And I understand that they had heard someone maybe have a gun or what have you, but he hopped the train. It's a fear. He was so scared for his life, he told people to call his mom, completely complying with his hands up and the type of force that was used there. You have another location where there were teens fighting, and it should be held accountable for that. But your job as a trained police officer is to de-escalate that. And some were trying to get a handle of the situation. And there was one officer that just started punching children and teenagers in the face. There's no way that someone could say that was acceptable. And that is, again, a example of what people are saying and how communities are policed.
New York City public advocate Jomani Williams, reelected yesterday. Congratulations again, and thanks as always for coming on.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.